Welcome to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. Bronwyn Franklin is a peer support specialist with a history of mental health disease. She served 8 years in a Michigan prison where she began to work toward her own recovery through self-awareness and unlearning those beliefs and behaviors that led her to prison. Welcome, Bronwyn.
Thank you, Karen.
Bronwyn, when were you diagnosed with a mental health disease?
I received my first diagnosis at the age of 13. There had been a lot of challenges before that because of a lot of the childhood trauma.
Talk about the childhood trauma.
Well, I grew up in a family where my father was a heroin addict and my mother was an alcoholic. And there was lots of verbal abuse, physical abuse. We were pretty poor. We moved a lot and it just felt pretty empty and there was not a lot of love in the home. I started out being pretty much a caretaker for my brother when I was the age of 9. And by the time I was 11, I was the caretaker of 2 nephews as well. And so I was pretty much the adult in the family, in the household, because no adults were present.
And at age 13, what was your diagnosis?
I was diagnosed with depression, and unfortunately, I had had some other things. I had had a teenage pregnancy at by the age of 13 as well, and I had been put on 5 milligrams of Valium.
So what happened in your teen years?
Definitely became very rebellious. I was very angry, so I was very withdrawn. I started to withdraw from family and friends and just kind of pick up alcohol and marijuana and other pills.
And were you on medication after you were diagnosed at age 13?
They did not have me on psychotropic medications. I was self-medicating lightly. And I went through a series of counseling. And what took me there was my oldest sister, because she had started to get counseling for herself. And she realized that we had a lot of screwed up stuff in our family. So she took me to a counselor and I wasn't on the medications, but I was getting talk therapy.
When did your life take a turn to become involved with the criminal justice system?
When I ended up in prison, I was 37, 38 years old when I finally ended up in the prison system. Prior to that, yes, I had been involved in smaller criminal activities that I never got caught for. Being raised in a household with a heroin addict who took me to a lot of places and taught me a lot of things that a 3 or 4 or 5 year old should not know, I learned to be street savvy. But when I had children, I started to see life a lot differently. What took me to the prison system is there's a lot of suicidal issues and a lot of mental health challenges between the ages of 13 and 37. And then I had 3 children in the midst of that as well. I constantly battled with my mental health diagnosis of, then it became major reoccurring depression after 3 suicide attempts. My children is kind of what kept me tried to be focused, but I wouldn't take the medication. I didn't like the way the medication made me feel. I felt groggy. I felt slow. I felt disconnected. And I would just push through whatever I was going through until I could get through the other side. One suicide attempt landed me into psychiatric ward for 21 days. And that was pretty hard because I had 2 small children. One was 5 and 1 was like 18 months old. And basically, I had laid in the bed for 11 days. And the 4-year-old was actually fixing sandwiches to feed him and his brother because I couldn't even get out the bed. I was so depressed. And then I decided I was going to jump off an overpass. So that was a part of my journey, but I kept battling through it and pushing through it because I thought my kids deserved better. And I didn't want to leave my children in the care of the people who raised me. I didn't trust them enough.
So at that time, you have children, you're depressed, major depression, suicide attempts. Were you receiving any type of mental health treatment or support, anything?
I was in and out of treatment. I would go for a while until I felt better, and then I would stop. And I would stop because everybody wanted to push the medication, and they kept changing the medication, and it didn't seem to be what was helping me. It just seemed to kept me in a fog. So by the time I ended up in prison, I had just been through a day treatment program. I had a good job. I was working for the first time in my life where I had a job for over a year. So I had been at this job about 5 years, good benefits. And I had been through a day treatment program, and they had me on Prozac. And I wasn't feeling any better, so I stopped taking it. Little do I know that I had been diagnosed improperly all those years. I was bipolar.
Instead of depressed?
Just depressed, yes. The depression was the overlying sign. And what I found out later on is, and this is what happened when I was in prison, I found out that's where I got diagnosed, bipolar.
In prison?
In prison. What is bipolar? What is that? How did that happen? Where did it come from? And no one really gave me an answer. They just basically told me, you're going to be on this medication the rest of your life. You're going to be disabled and nothing else. So I started to try to find out what that meant, what that looked like. Where did it come from?
Were you feeling the manic highs and depressed lows? Is that what you were experiencing?
Yes. But I did not realize that the highs that I was feeling, I had more lows that were profound, but the highs that I was feeling, I thought that was normal because that was the behavior that I had saw in so many of my relatives.
A euphoric behavior?
Yes. And the anger and the rage, you know, and the mood swings. I came from a family where we never knew what my mom's behavior was going to be when she walked through the door. We were always on eggshells. We never knew if she was going to be just agitated, if she was going to be happy, or we just never knew. And I had a lot of that similarity behavior. So I thought it was normal. So when I was getting treatment, I never told them about these behaviors. You know, I never told them about not sleeping. I never told them about having an addicted husband, and I would stay up all night walking the streets trying to find him in the crack houses, and then stay up all day and work. I thought that was normal.
What led to your incarceration?
So as I was speaking about being on the Prozac, I came off and it took me into a manic state, which I really didn't know that was manic. So for about 4 months, I didn't sleep no more than 3 to 4 hours a day. I worked 6-7 days a week, 8 to 12 hours a day. I was very irritable, and I was going from being suicidal to angry within a matter of seconds, just constantly back and forth. What I know now is that's called cycling, and that was rapid cycling. So in the midst of trying to correct a relationship that I was in at the time, because by this time I had divorced my husband, who was the drug addict, and I was living with this other fellow, and he either had a drug or drinking or a gambling problem. He had a lot of problems, but I was the sole breadwinner, and he was very abusive, mentally abusive, verbally abusive, and it had started to really upset my children. My sons were teenagers, and I was worried about them doing some harm to this gentleman. So I asked him to leave. At the time, he told me he wasn't going anywhere. And there was a physical altercation. And somewhere along the line between at the moment of just wanting to die because I didn't know what else to do, something snapped. And he was almost murdered. I almost murdered him. I don't really like to talk about what I did because it was a pretty heinous thing. And my son was in the next room. So when he ran into the room from all the commotion, that's when I kind of came back to myself and saw what was happening. So there's no PSRB type program in Michigan. So basically I took a plea because I felt like I needed to take responsibility for what I had done on my part. And the plea was originally supposed to be for 5 to 10 years, but the judge told me, no, you are 30-something years old. You're a grown woman. You know right from wrong. And he gave me 10 to 20. I had never been in prison. I had no criminal record in spite of all the things that had went on in my life. So I kind of accepted that prison sentence as I'm paying for all the things that I did that I never got caught for. And this is going to be a new beginning, because I truly believe that some people call it karma. I believe that whatever, and this is a spiritual term, but you reap what you sow. So I had sowed all these years of different criminal behavior that didn't get caught for. So now I'm reaping that in the end.
Was your mental health state ever taken into consideration during the plea bargain?
So this was in 1997. There was not a lot of talk around trauma. There wasn't a forensic exam, and I was found competent to stand trial. And that's about as far as that went. Even though I had been on suicide watch in the county jail, when I was in the county jail, and, you know, I was on medication and all of the above, there was no such thing as talk of brown trauma or adverse childhood experiences and how trauma had shaped my life. There was no, mm-hmm. None of that was considered.
You are sentenced to 10 to 20 years in a Michigan prison.
Yes.
And you came to realize, or you realized that you needed help, you needed treatment. What was available to you in the prison to help with what you were going through at the time mentally?
There is not a lot available. There's not a lot available. When I first went in, I found out that the medication that I was on was a benzo, which was Klonopin, and I needed to be weaned off of that. This is the first thing that's helped me in years, and, you know, I got to come off. But I'm like, okay, there was no psychiatrist. There were some counselors that you saw once a month for 15 minutes. They offered certain groups because I was mandated to take anger management and assault of offenders program. Those were part of the stipulations I needed to take before I could be released. Those are two things. But what hit me was after the fog kind of lifted after like maybe 6 months is I was away from my children, and they were in the hands of all the people that I didn't want them to be in the hands of.
And how old were your children at that time?
My oldest was 17, and he was on his way to Ohio State for college. My youngest son, who was in the house with me at the time, was 13, and my daughter was 9 going on 10. And they were kind of all separated. And they were in the hands of people that I really didn't think could care for them the way I would. And so my first thought was, how did I get here? What is this all about? And how do I change it to be a better person? And early on, when I first got in there, there was a counselor. She was a young lady, and I only got to meet with her maybe 2 or 3 times. So I can't even remember her name because I was so medicated. But what started the process of my self-awareness was she asked me 2 questions. She asked me, who was I? And she asked me, what was my dreams? And when I answered the first question, I answered the question, I was this person's daughter, this person's granddaughter, this person's wife, this person's mom. I answered it. And she said, no, that's not what I'm asking you. I'm asking you, who are you as a person? What are your characteristics? And I had been the victim so long, I had no identity of my own. And I'm 37, 38 years old. So she had to kind of dig it out of me. And she asked me, she said, what are some of the good things in your life? And then I realized that I have 3 children and all 3 were on the honor roll. Out of this story, I never said all 3 of them have different fathers. And they weren't in their life. I was the constant piece that was there. So that was part of who I was. I was a good teacher. I was a good mom. I was a good listener. You know, I had
a
real
nurturer, everything. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I realized that people had this way of always coming to me and telling me their troubles and their woes. And so I was a good listener. I had wisdom. So I started, that started the journey of my self-awareness and finding my identity of who I was and what I was capable of. And then the next question she asked me was, what was my dreams? And I told her I didn't have any dreams. All my dreams were for my children and what I believed that they could do in life. And she said, before you had children, you had dreams, didn't you? And I was like, oh, yeah. She said, well, what were those dreams? And I said, well, I always wanted to travel. And I wanted to be a CPA. I wanted to own my own firm. And she looked at me and she said, so why can't you do those things? The light bulb went off. And that started my journey to self-awareness and realizing that I needed to unlearn the things about myself that I believed about myself. But what the hard part was, okay, I can remove these bad behaviors, these bad thoughts, these bad feelings, but if I don't replace them with something, I would go back to the familiar. And I realized that. So I had 8 years to work on this. And my question to myself was, in my lifetime, when was I the most happiest? And back before my daughter was born, I had joined a church. And for probably the first 3 or 4 years of her life, I belonged to a church. And I put a lot into that. We were in church every day for prayer, twice on Sunday for service. It was a Pentecostal church. And I realized that was where I was the most happiest. That's where I felt the most, without the most worries and burdens, and life felt good. So I went back to my spiritual roots. I did a lot of studying. I decided that I wanted to be a spiritual counselor. I wanted to go into the ministry and be a spiritual counselor. But I didn't want to be a social worker, though, because I didn't want to tell people what to do or how to do it. I wanted to help people find their paths and find their journeys. So I spent a lot of time crocheting, reading my Bible, teaching GD classes, legal writing, and just finding me and what I like to do, mm-hmm. because I never knew that.
All in prison.
All in prison.
So this all started with one counselor in prison asking you two simple questions, and with the driving force of your children, being away from your children. How did the prisons, or did the prisons support you in all of these efforts? Your self-awareness, trying to unlearn these behaviors or beliefs that led you to prison?
I think there's two sides to that. The prison itself doesn't have anything in place to help you. I think where I got the help and the support from was the officers and the other inmates. And the reason why I say that is because they could see something in me that a lot of people have saw that I didn't see. And people just, they kind of let me be because I didn't bother people. I had a sense of wisdom. I was quiet. I was calming. If anything, they gravitated towards me, you know, because they knew that I was that person, that nurturer and that supporter. So
give an example of that, Bronwyn.
I just been speaking about this recently. There was a young lady who was incarcerated with me, and she had been there for almost 18 years. And she kept getting in trouble. And they kept flopping her. They wouldn't let her out. She had a manslaughter charge, and she had come up for parole a couple of times. So she had bad epileptic seizures. And somehow or another, she kind of attached to me, and we became good friends. And when she would have these seizures, everybody, the first thing they would say is, go get Miss Franklin. Go get Miss Franklin. You know, and I could go and I could sit next to her, and she's having these seizures, and I could just kind of talk to her, and she would just kind of relax and calm down, and she wouldn't let nobody else touch her. And I started to explain things about, this is why they keep flopping you. She started to listen and she stopped getting in trouble. So the officers weren't writing her up for, you know, different little things, you know, that she was doing or talking back or, you know, yelling or whatever. That was one instance. Another was I always had somebody knocking on my door asking, can you just sit with me and listen? Another thing is helping people get their GED. I had some ladies in there who were well in their 30s and 40s, been in the streets using drugs for so many years and had second grade math levels or reading levels. And they worked with different tutors along the way, but they still couldn't, you know, it wasn't connecting. But then I could sit down with them and I may have to explain it three or four different ways. But eventually they got it. And I had a couple of them actually get GEDs.
Mm-hmm. Those are really wonderful gifts that you have, Bronwyn.
But I had not recognized it in the first 40 years of my life that they were great gifts and they were important gifts and they were not for me to run from or resent, because I resented some of those. I cried. I was like, Lord, why me? Why is everybody crying with their problems? I have problems. And it came to me that it was, this is a gift. Mm-hmm. And so now I use my gift in peer support to help others along their journey.
For people that may not know what a peer support specialist is, what is a peer support specialist?
Okay, yeah. Well, a peer support specialist is that person who has lived experience with mental health disease, who are trained to go in and walk along someone who is having challenges and struggles to help them find their strengths and reach their goals.
So you walk along with them on their journey.
Yes.
To recovery.
Yes. And we don't direct them to what to do or how to do it. The simple questions that counselor asked me all those years ago are some of the same questions I ask. Who are you and what do you want to do?
And Bronwyn, Prison Pipeline is heard by prisoners serving time. What would you say to a prisoner or anyone really out there who is experiencing some of the same things that you went through in your life?
That is a great question. I think the first thing I think of is be true to who you are. And when I say be true to who you are, it's okay to be and do the things that make you happy. We don't need to fit into someone else's box, you know, because we are individuals and we are okay being who we are. We're not broken. We don't need fixing. We need to just love ourselves. And I think that's what I would say.
So, Bronwyn, you released from prison, and what was life like after prison?
Release from prison. That has its own story in itself. I was to be released in August of 2006. I was not released until February of 2007.
After eight years.
So coming home had its own set of challenges. During the time I was in prison, my oldest son wound up going to prison in Ohio on a capital murder charge, and he's sentenced to life without parole. 2 years after that, my mom died from, she called it liver cancer. I call it cirrhosis of the liver. And 3 weeks before I was supposed to see the parole board, my youngest son was murdered. He was on the street suffering from schizophrenia, and he was murdered by a 13-year-old. Oh. So the parole board decided not to let me go home in August because they wanted to monitor my mental health. So coming home was very different because I was in a place where a lot of the people that were important to me or I love was not there. The little girl that I left, she was almost 18. I didn't want to go back to Detroit because that was so much pain. I had been the support for so many of my family members. It was like, I didn't want to go back. But in the midst of being in prison in 2005, in my prayer life, God told me I was coming to Portland. Hmm. and I didn't know where Portland was. I had to really look it up and find out. I had never been here. Didn't have any friends or family here, but he told me I was coming here, and it was going to make my life great. So I went home because I had nowhere else to go. They had sold my mom's house. My brother had moved to New York, and so I had an inheritance. Everybody was worried that I was going to go crazy, but I bought a house because I knew that I still had a daughter, and her and I still needed a roof over our head, and I was a felon. And was I going to be able to get a job? But we needed a house. We needed a home. So I bought a home. And when they sent me home from prison, they sent me to an adult foster care home and told me to get Social Security because I would never work again because I was just mentally screwed up. Social Security told me, you function too well. We're not giving you a check. So in the midst of being in the foster care home, someone sent me, and I don't know who sent it to me. It was just divine intervention. A flyer saying that they were hiring for peer support specialists. I didn't know what a peer support specialist was, but I needed a job. I applied. I wound up being interviewed by eight CEOs, and I told them my story. I'm telling it to you. And they gave me a job. They trained me, and I started doing this work, and it felt so good. And then I went to a conference, and I met a lady in a conference that was from Portland. And
While I was still in Michigan.
Oh. And her and I chatted, but I was too afraid to break free from Michigan. In the midst of that, she came and did a conference in Michigan, and I saw her again. At that point, I was ready to step out. I interviewed for a job at the company that she was at, and I wound up moving to Portland. So I've been in Portland 8 years now, doing peer support work, doing trainings. I've been training individuals to be peer supports. I've done some speaking. I'm on several committees. I'm on a couple of board of directors now. And I'm just living the best life. And it's like, I never thought 20 years ago that I would be here and touched as many lives as I've touched and given back to so many people as I have. It's been an amazing journey.
And you are a survivor.
That was one of the things that I had to get out of the victim mode and realize that I was a survivor, that I am a strong person. I am a resilient person. I was built to last, and I'm built to get through whatever comes my way. I still have dark days. I still have down days, but I don't have suicide days anymore. I still see a therapist. I see her now. We're like every 3 weeks now. But I do these things because they help keep me moving forward. When I first came home from prison, I gave myself a mantra, and I did it on my Facebook page. And my Facebook page was called Bronwyn Moving Forward, because I'm moving forward in life now. I'm not going to stand still and allow things to happen to me. I'm going to make things happen for me and move forward so that things can happen better for my children and other people around me.
What advice would you have for someone who is going through some challenges and maybe releasing from prison or jail about peer support specialists?
Find a peer support specialist. Connect with a mentor or a peer support specialist. Walk that journey with them, because we've been down that road. We've had the challenges. We've faced the difficulties, and we have the resources to share and the strength to share along those journeys.
So Bronwyn Franklin, thank you so much for being on Prison Pipeline, and all the best to you.
Thank you, Karen, for having me. I enjoyed it.